Imagine you're sitting at an oceanic control position, somewhere in the bowels of the Shanwick Oceanic Control Center in Prestwick, Scotland. Instead of radar returns showing you where aircraft actually are, you're looking at estimated position symbols, computed positions based on the last time someone called in over HF radio. The aircraft out there, maybe 200 of them on a busy North Atlantic night, aren't actually appearing on your display. They're being plotted based on what they reported 30 minutes ago, in a radio call that sounded like someone gargling gravel through a shortwave receiver. That was oceanic surveillance for most of aviation history, right up until 2019. And if you've ever flown North Atlantic tracks or transited the Pacific, or done any crossing where you went feet wet for more than an hour or two, you know the experience from the other side. You call in at your oceanic entry fix. You give your position, your cruising level, your Mach number, your time estimate to the next waypoint, and then you vanish. You're in the system, your position is being estimated, and for the next 30 minutes, you could be doing almost anything, and nobody in the world would know until your next report came due. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Vector on Cleared Direct, and today we're talking about the satellite network that turned the lights on over every ocean simultaneously. We're talking about Aireon. Before we get into the engineering, a quick word from our segment sponsor. This episode of Clear Direct is supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins marking the milestones that actually matter. First solo private pilot. Certificate, instrument rating, certified flight instructor, airline. Transport pilot, the kind of coin worth pressing into someone's hand after a life-changing flight. Beautiful. Built to last. AviationSoul.com. Now, let's break down what oceanic surveillance actually was and why the change mattered as much as it did. The problem with radar is fundamental physics. Ground-based radar has a horizon. Past roughly 200 miles from the antenna, the curvature of the Earth means the signal can't reach high-altitude aircraft. The North Atlantic is roughly 2,000 miles wide at its narrowest crossing. The Pacific is considerably wider. No network of ground stations, no matter how many you build, can cover that kind of distance from the surface. So for decades, oceanic control operated on a system called procedural separation. Instead of watching aircraft on a screen, controllers managed them with time and distance. You're assigned a track, a cruising level, and a Mach number. You're required to hold those parameters, report your position every 30 minutes over HF radio, and trust that every other aircraft in the system is doing the same. The controller isn't watching you fly. They're building a mental picture based on your reports and the reports of every other aircraft in the sector. It works. It has worked for a very long time, across billions of passenger miles of oceanic flight, but the margins required are enormous. Longitudinal separation on the North Atlantic Organized Track System, what most people in the business call NAT-OTS, used to be a minimum of 10 minutes of flying time. At typical transatlantic cruise speeds, that translates to roughly 80 to 90 nautical miles between aircraft on the same track. And in some circumstances, that buffer grew to 30 minutes. The system had to be conservative because nobody actually knew with precision where anything was between position reports. The North Atlantic tracks operate like a conveyor belt, every day, based on the jet stream forecast. A set of optimal tracks is published for the eastbound flow and the westbound flow. Aircraft bid for track time slots based on their filed speed and altitude. The system works remarkably well, but efficiency has always been constrained by the surveillance gap. You cannot compress separation if you cannot actually verify that spacing is being maintained. Then in March of 2014, Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 disappeared somewhere over the southern Indian Ocean. An ocean with no radar coverage, no ADS-B ground stations. The only way anyone could attempt to locate the aircraft was to work backward from a series of automated satellite handshakes with the Inmarsat network, a satellite network that was never designed to track aircraft being pressed into service as the only available breadcrumb trail. The search was one of the largest and most expensive in aviation history. The primary search zone shifted multiple times as analysts refined their models of what those Inmarsat handshakes actually meant geometrically. Years passed, debris washed up on beaches thousands of miles from the initial search area. To this day, the bulk of the wreckage has never been found. And the central question the aviation community could not avoid was blunt. How do we still have oceans where a wide-body jet can disappear? That question accelerated a project that had already been underway for 3 years. Aireon was founded in 2011 as a joint venture. The original partners were Iridium Communications, NAV Canada, which manages Canadian airspace, and a significant portion of the North Atlantic, NATS from the United Kingdom, INAV from Italy, and the Irish Aviation Authority. The concept was genuinely ambitious. Instead of building more ground stations that could only reach so far, they would put automatic dependent surveillance broadcast receivers in orbit. Let's break down what that means technically. ADS-B, which stands for Automatic Dependent Surveillance Broadcast, works by having the aircraft's GPS receiver determine the precise position, then broadcast that position along with identification, altitude, and velocity on a radio frequency. For the International Transport Fleet, that frequency is 1,090 MHz, which is the same frequency aviation transponders have always used. The aircraft's avionics package determines position, formats the message, and it goes out on the antenna continuously, roughly once per second. Ground-based ADS-B receivers are exactly what the name suggests. An antenna, usually on a tower or hilltop, listening for those broadcasts within line-of-sight range. The FAA's ground network across the continental United States is extensive. But over an ocean, there's nothing to mount an antenna on, unless you put the antenna on a satellite. Iridium had already committed to a complete replacement of their satellite constellation. The original Iridium network, launched in the late 1990s, was the first truly global satellite communication system. 66 satellites in low Earth orbit, arranged in polar planes so that coverage overlaps everywhere on the planet, including the poles. The original constellation was technically remarkable and commercially troubled. The company filed for bankruptcy in 1999, went through restructuring, and eventually found a sustainable business providing satellite voice and data services to maritime, aviation, and government customers. By the early 2010s, the original satellites were aging out, and Iridium committed to launching an entirely new constellation called Iridium Next. Arion's proposal was elegant in its simplicity. Each of the 66 new Iridium Next satellites would carry an additional payload, a hosted ADS-B receiver antenna. Arion would share in the development costs. Iridium would host the hardware. Every time a satellite passed over an aircraft transmitting ADS-B, it would receive that broadcast, timestamp it, and relay the data to the ground through Iridium's existing infrastructure. The physics of low Earth orbit are what make this work. Geostationary satellites sit at roughly 22,000 miles altitude. At that distance, the signal from an ADS-B transmitter, which is not a particularly powerful signal, gets extremely weak. The geometry is also poor for high-latitude coverage, since geostationary satellites are fixed over the equator. Iridium's constellation orbits at about 480 miles altitude, close enough that ADS-B signals from aircraft are fully receivable, and because the 66 satellites are in polar orbits that sweep across the entire planet, at least one satellite has line of sight to any point on the Earth's surface at any given moment. What that adds up to is global ADS-B coverage. Anywhere, all the time. The satellites began launching on SpaceX Falcon 9 rockets starting in 2017. The constellation was complete, and Arion went live for commercial operations in November of 2019. NAV Canada was the first air navigation service provider to adopt the data operationally. Others followed quickly. Shanwick Oceanic, the joint UK and Ireland unit that manages the Eastern North Atlantic. Reykjavik, the oceanic control centers managing polar routes. By 2020, the system was providing real-time surveillance data to providers covering the majority of oceanic airspace. The operational impact was measurable almost immediately. Position update rate from Arion is roughly once per second, matching the ADS-B broadcast rate from the aircraft. Latency from aircraft transmission to a controller's screen is under 1 second. Compare that to a position report every 30 minutes. That is not an incremental improvement. That is an entirely different category of surveillance. Safety analyses based on actual Arion system performance supported a reduction of longitudinal separation on certain North Atlantic tracks to as little as 14 nautical miles in some operational scenarios. That's still not a trivial gap, but compare it to the 80-plus nautical miles that procedural separation required, and you understand what changed. More aircraft can safely fly the same optimal tracks. More operators get the routing they actually filed. Fuel burns come down across the entire transatlantic operation because fewer flights are being forced onto suboptimal tracks when the preferred ones are theoretically full. NAV Canada reported that in the first full year of operations with Arion data, Controllers identified hundreds of aircraft deviating from assigned tracks or altitudes, an aircraft that drifts off its assigned level because of turbulence avoidance, or a technical issue, or a crew decision without a clearance, before Aireon, that might not have been caught until the next position report, 30 minutes later. With real-time surveillance, the controller calls the flight immediately. The potential conflict margin collapses from 30 minutes to seconds. Here's what most people miss when they first encounter this system. Aireon isn't only for oceanic surveillance. It's capable of providing supplemental coverage in any remote area where ground-based ADS-B infrastructure has gaps. Canada has significant airspace above the Arctic Circle, where building and maintaining ground stations is logistically and economically very difficult. Aireon data fills those gaps without requiring a single new tower. Polar routes between North America and Asia, which had been in the same procedural separation regime as the North Atlantic, are now continuously monitored as well. Now, I want to address the MH370 question directly, because precision matters here. After the loss of that flight, the International Civil Aviation Organization, known as ICAO, developed new tracking requirements under what it called the Global Aeronautical Distress and Safety System. The standard requires that aircraft flying over remote areas must be trackable to within 6 nautical miles, with position updates at least every minute, even during a distress situation. The intent is that there cannot be a repeat of a scenario where a large transport aircraft disappears, and the search spans multiple oceans for years. Aireon is designed to meet that requirement. If the aircraft is transmitting ADS-B and a satellite has line of sight, which it always does over any oceanic area, the position is known continuously. The moment a flight deviates from its plan, the moment an aircraft descends rapidly or alters heading without a clearance, that's visible in near real time. Had MH370 happened today, had the ADS-B transponder remained active after the aircraft deviated from its filed route, the entire flight path would have been recorded by Aireon continuously. No multi-year mystery about which ocean to search. There is an honest technical caveat to acknowledge. Aireon requires a functioning ADS-B out transmission. If the transponder is switched off, the satellites cannot see the aircraft. That's not a gap unique to Aireon. It's the fundamental nature of cooperative surveillance, which ADS-B is. The aircraft has to participate. The same limitation exists with secondary radar. The transponder has to be on. The fleet equipping rate has been the variable over time. When Aireon went commercial in 2019, not every aircraft crossing the oceans had compliant ADS-B out installed. Older freighters operating on equipment exemptions were an issue. The mandate environment in Europe and the FAA's own January 2020 deadline have steadily driven the fleet toward full equipping. The percentage of North Atlantic traffic visible on Aireon has been climbing consistently. From a cost structure perspective, the way Aireon works is fundamentally different from building physical infrastructure. The Iridium Next constellation's capital cost was already committed and largely spent before Aireon's first commercial dollar came in. Aireon pays to host its payload on each satellite and purchases data relay capacity through Iridium. It then sells surveillance data as a service to air navigation service providers who build that cost into the fees charged to operators. From the aircraft operator's perspective, if you already have compliant ADS-B out installed, there is no additional equipment to buy. The receiver is 66 satellites you didn't have to build or maintain. For pilots listening, here's the bottom line. Your ADS-B out isn't just a regulatory checkbox. It's the signal that Aireon's 66 receivers are listening for every second of every flight. Every position broadcast your avionics send out is being received by a satellite passing overhead. That data is feeding a display in an oceanic control center somewhere. It's what allows reduced separation standards, it's what makes efficient track assignments possible for the operators behind you, and it's what would focus a search and rescue response in the right location in minutes rather than months. The ocean used to be a place where aircraft checked in every 30 minutes and otherwise flew in the dark, crossing thousands of miles on procedural trust and conservative buffers. That era ended in 2019. The lights are on over every ocean now in real time, from 66 satellites passing overhead in low Earth orbit. Sources today came from Aireon's commercial operations reporting, Nav Canada implementation documentation, ICAO's Global Aeronautical Tracking Framework, and technical coverage from Aviation Week and Space Technology. Find past clear direct episodes at radiohanger.com. I'm Vector.